Our scripture text for today is quite familiar and is part of our go-to text. But really, you're probably not going to recognize it until the very end, because it's one of these ones where that lasting final image is the image, and that's the one that we have on our posters and plots and all the rest. But in the larger context too, it brings us into knowing and hearing the voice of God. This is Isaiah chapter 40, verses 21 through 31. Have you not known? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is Yahweh who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain and spreads them like a tent to live in, who brings princes to naught and makes rulers of the earth nothing. Scarcely are they planted, scarcely sown, scarcely are the stem taken root in the earth, when God blows upon them and they wither, and the tempest carries them off like stubble. To whom then will you compare me, or who is my equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high and see who created these. Yahweh, who brings out their host and numbers them, calling them all by name, because he is great in strength, mighty in power, not one is missing. Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and my right is disregarded by my God? Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. Yahweh does not grow faint or weary. His understanding is unsearchable. God gives power to the faint and strengthens the powerless. Even the youths will faint and be weary, and the young will fall exhausted. But those who wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up on wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. One of the more interesting bits for me of a public lecture is often the introduction. Beyond learning why the speaker is here and what gives them the right to speak, you often are reminded of the things that you may have forgotten. Going to a Mennonite school through college and then grad school, it was the time where I said, oh yeah, they have a doctorate. It's not just John. It's Dr. John speaking to us about what's this and that. And there might be the charming anecdote of what happened a long time ago or far away. All the things that say, this is why you need to listen. And, of course, the more important and high-powered the speaker, the more ingratiating and lengthy the introduction, to the point where you might wonder which is the main attraction, the beginning or the meat of the sandwich. If you spent much time in a professional or academic environment, you know the style and the cadence and the implications all too well. You set the person up, give them the credibility, and speak to the needs and the demands of the audience that they need to hear. And in case you didn't notice, That's what we have here. The writer is introducing, of all people, God. Here is Yahweh God, who is above all things, who creates all things, who outlasts every prince that there ever was or ever shall be. It's this litany of characteristics of God and the demands of Yahweh, naming them in the accomplishment of Yahweh again and again all the way through. And while we're used to that in the Psalms, where it's worship and ideas, it's a little bit surprising, at least in the prophets. Because they're supposed to say, thus saith the Lord, because you know what? The Lord needs a word with you. As we turn to the Bible for a lot of things, inspiration, solace, counsel, and perhaps even a good story now and again, we assume that the language of the Bible is always referring back to a basic understanding that God is God and God is out there and the people of God are in conversation with Yahweh. But here is a little bit of, but this is why you should listen. And here's what's going on. But it's there for a purpose. I think on occasion we forget the fuller nature of the Bible as we have it. Receiving it as we do in bits and bytes and reading a chapter and verse and even phrase at a time, it's easy to break free of the real world chronology of what is going on behind the scenes and where all of this is coming from. If you look at a timeline of the book of Isaiah and where people think pieces of it may have been written, it stretches from about 850 BC all the way to 450 BC. And everywhere in between. And because there's different authors and different stories and different compilations of Isaiah along the way, that where things came together and things happened along the way. And this text, chapter 40 in particular, is one of those moments where you have the story picking up again. Where you leave off in chapter 39, you have King Hezekiah, the one who has doomed Israel, saying, taking the words of the prophet to heart and saying, well, at least I'll have peace in my time, and ignoring all the bits that he just got done saying that spelled doom and disaster for everybody else. Exile came, the destruction of Jerusalem, and everybody was carted off into exile. And then you turn the page, and you have this. If this were cinema, this is where you'd have a deep fade to black, and then come up with the title of Sometime Later. Or if it was truly classic cinema, this is about where you'd want the intermission to go, get the popcorn. A lot happened along the way, and as often is the case in the Bible, what starts in one generation carries on to generations hence. And that's why you need the introduction. Because after all this time, after all these years, after all this waiting, there needs to be this conversation that's saying, remember Yahweh? Remember God? God is even here. And all this stuff still applies. We can get lost when we read and when we can go through a 40-year sojourn in the wilderness in the course of an hour. And we can forget that a lot of life can happen in the meantime. And so here, at the beginning of the second book of Isaiah, as it's often called, the knowledge of God has faded, and the imagination of God with us is quite remote. They have to acquaint themselves to something new entirely. Which is quite the trick. Because when you can't conceive of what might come next, it can be hard to hope for what it is. And preparing and encountering something along the way where you don't entirely know the shape can be a little bit daunting. Back when Emily and I made the move from Saskatchewan to Winnipeg, we actually went house shopping while Luke was still in the hospital. He had long since stabilized, and was long since there, and we knew that this was coming. So while we still had top-notch child care, we might as well take a trip and go find a house. So we flew off for the weekend, and we spent the weekend looking around at different houses and different ideas, and we found one a couple blocks from the Jubilee Church. It was there, and we found actually a couple there. And of course, us being us, the one that we put an offer on was the one that was, frankly, the biggest project. And of course, we got it. And of course, projects being what they are, where we said, well, surely, it's January, we're going to move in May, we have 5 months to get this done. And of course, we end up spending the summer living in the gutted basement apartment while we gutted the upstairs to get on with what needed to happen. Talk about the way too much this old house for HGTV. We had this vision of what could happen here, and we just fell in love and we went with it. And we did pull it off, all with newborn in tow, and eventually it's number two on the way. I think it's becoming abundantly clear that while we don't lack ambition, common sense might be debatable. And I have to say, we're quite proud of the results, even if we didn't end up getting to sit with it all that long. What I love about a project like this, though, is the very nature of the revelation along the way. You catch an idea, you catch a notion, and you say, huh, what would happen if you took this wall out? How would it change? And then over time, you start digging into it, and you get the inevitable surprises, and you go along the way, and slowly things open up and change, and what was only imagination becomes real. Even if we do have to debate on a regular basis, no, it's not quite yet time to move into the kitchen. All this is my way of saying, I think that there's something to this, this sort of construction idea at work for Isaiah as well. Because what Isaiah is trying to offer the people is a way to give them hope and a concept of, oh, but could you see what God could do? Could you imagine where God could be? Could you even have a notion of going back to something different than just being a subjugated people? And that's quite the project that they're undertaking, because after so many years and so many disappointments, How do you start imagining something different? Because what is here and now is difficult. It doesn't seem all that likely to change. And now God says, oh, but it can. And how do we get our head around believing that this could even be true? It can be hard to hope beyond our immediate experiences. We struggle to imagine that anything beyond what I feel right here, right now, right today, could be different. Especially when our moment is something beyond what we could even imagine. I think that even here, while we start to see these first signs of a spring thaw in this long COVID winter that we've been living, it's hard to even wrap our heads around what would a normal look like outside of saying, well, you know, the stuff that was before, which is probably our way of saying, we don't even want to think about what might not change. You know, our problems, our dis-ease runs deep and spreads wide when we're not in places that we know what to do with and where to go. And when much is unclear and uncertain, we might even be wondering where God has gone in the midst of all of this. In this way, I think we have a lot in common with Isaiah's people in their moment. Like a people who have long prepared for a journey only to be thwarted by delays, they might be weary, they might be tired, and exile, at least, is what they know. But that's when we need to come back and be reintroduced to remember that God is God. That God hears. That God acts. That God cares. And with that in light, all hope, all promise, all reality is held before us. And in that we can hope. Oftentimes we have been reminded of what we already know. And we need to be reminded of what we already know. Both that we suffer like everyone else, and that God comes in that suffering all the same. And when we're in that moment, when we're in that time of having to reconnect to those big, deep truths that are hard to hold on to, we have a choice. We have a choice of where we turn our eyes, either solely to what is now, and the blinkers of what is here, but also we can choose to think of what will be and choose to hope. People can choose to hope. The NRSV begins chapter 31, that most familiar chunk of this text, with the words, "But those who wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength." Other translations use trust, or in still others interpret the word as hope. And all three verbs seem awfully passive. Those who just simply wait on the bench and hang out until the bus comes shall renew their strength. And we think of waiting simply as doing nothing until we're free to do something real. Trust can be seen as nothing more than a naive posture that looks for a hero to come and save the day, and hope holds a little substance and a wish made like we're tossing a coin into a fountain or looking upon a star. And we can choose to think about these things in those ways. But we can also choose to think about the active engagement in our waiting, our trusting, our hoping, and saying, yes, even here God comes. Even here God is active. I may not see it. I may not know it, and I may certainly not feel it, but God comes and God moves. We can choose instead to be active in our waiting and our hoping and our trusting, because in doing so, we engage in the promise of the God who is with us. We can do this with the expectation that God does act in God's own time, to be sure, but will act all the same and with power. The words of Isaiah, the words of the prophet, redeems the time that seems to have been lost, squandered, or wasted to do something different. And then that will be there. Remember that that pause between 39 and 40 is longer than a line of the book. Generations have passed, and no prophetic word has come into their presence. Now the prophet says to the people, that sorrow is not wasted. Difference and change is not only that which is other. Even here, God comes. Perhaps it's the time of renewing what the people are looking for. Maybe it's the time of sorting out what is really important and what can be left go. The seeming dormancy might be a time to recharge and get strength back and do something different with more energy and more strength. Going full throttle all the time will exhaust even the young and the strong. But if we embrace with weight, embrace the weight and the trust and the hope, we can be made stronger. And we'll be given that updraft of the Spirit, sweeping us off to God knows where. And that, in the end, is the whole idea. That, in the end, is the whole hope of waiting and trusting on God, is knowing that in that trust and that wait, something new can happen. In this time of exile, after a fashion, we are given the opportunity to embrace this type of wait. Rather than fill every minute with the same meetings that we had before, only worse, or to spend exponentially more simply because we have the seeming convenience of having a virtual Zoom meeting, and yee-haw, we can. Maybe we should learn to wait. We can wait on the Lord. Not to simply be patient or passive, but simply to take the advantage of the opportunity to slow down and to pause for the purpose of remembering, renewing, and strengthening, and rebuilding. Because that's a gift of this moment. We don't have to be going quite so fast as we always do. And we can embrace what's here and now along the way. I offer these words both in retrospect of what has been of now almost 11 months, but also in anticipation of, as you've heard me say before, of, oh yes, we're getting awfully close. We can taste it on our lips. Yet we know that it's going to be a while yet. So being reminded now that even here and even now, we get to hope and wait and for that anticipation of God's good time is always a good word. May we do the best that we can to wait on the Lord and be amazed in that waiting at the places that God's wind eventually carries us. Amen.